Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Wednesday, February 10th, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. Title of today's podcast, Fake Unemployment. This is on the backs of Jay Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, making some comments this afternoon across the board on a number of issues, obviously about the economy, monetary policy, but made an interesting comment. And, you know, we learned last Friday from the Bureau of Labor Statistics that the official unemployment rate now sits at 6.3%. But according to Jay Powell, the real unemployment rate is closer to 10%. Where is that coming from, Jay? The government says it's 6.3. Why are you saying it's closer to 10? And then if you look further at the U6 rate, unemployment 6, there's six different rates obviously out there. The one that is the official is the U3 rate. But if you look at the broadest basket or the broadest measure, it's U6. That's at like 11.1%. Okay. And then if you look a little bit further at the initial jobless claims and you look at how many people are on some form of unemployment insurance and you do that math, well, that takes us closer to 13%. And what you have to understand also with respect to these unemployment figures is obviously if you are unemployed for longer than 1 year, you are no longer counted whatsoever. So these statistics are all over the place. Then when you take into consideration the Nobody Cares Act, the PPP loans, the Main Street lending facility via the Federal Reserve, it created and continues to create massive distortions throughout the economy and throughout the jobs market. So it becomes very difficult to gain a very vivid picture as to what is actually going on out there. That's why you have to look at all of these little pieces and put the pieces together to paint the best picture that we can. And a lot of this now is obviously by design. The government didn't want some of these statistics to be the worst in history. And of course, despite their efforts, some of them have hit their worst point in history since we've been maintaining records here in the U.S. So it's all smoke and mirrors. But something deeper is obviously at play here, because we knew that we were going to get a 1-2 punch with the Treasury Secretary, Janet Dingbat Yellen, who was the former chair of the Federal Reserve, joining forces, obviously, with Jay Powell and the other current members of the Federal Reserve Board. 1-2 punch. She was advocating why the $1.9 trillion spending bill needs to be passed. Well, her argument is, well, if we pass it, we will get to full employment by the end of next year. So it's never going to prove itself out. They'll always come up with, well, we need to keep the momentum going. We need to keep the momentum going. If there's any type of slippage with initial jobless claims, within the official jobs unemployment figure, whatever the case may be, they're always going to come up with another excuse for more and more and more. The stock market has a correction of 1% in one day. Everybody's going to cry. So now we have to spend more money. They're always going to find another excuse to justify more spending, more debt, more money printing. So it didn't take long at all for these two to join forces to get behind the same message, because the Federal Reserve has a dual mandate, price stability and full employment. They have failed on both measures constantly. But now they are trying to make good on the full employment portion of the mandate because stable prices, no way, no how. Not going to happen. So let's not pay attention to that part. Let's pay attention to maybe how we can create more jobs just by printing more money. It's not how it works. You can print money. You can't print jobs. You can't print solvency. You can't print a sound business plan. That's not how it works. So this is the message. This is now the justification. Oh, it's the little people. Oh, it's the little guy. Oh, it's the minorities. Oh, it's small businesses. It's always now we got to keep helping these people. That's the justification. This goes back to the Patriot Act or any type of bill, the Nobody Cares Act, obviously called the CARES Act. If you don't pass it, well, then you must not care. If you don't pass the Patriot Act, then you must be unpatriotic. It's going to be the same thing. If you can't get behind trillions of dollars of spending, well, then you must be against the unemployed. You must be against minorities. You must be against small businesses. This is how they try to box people in. This is their justification. So it's what we tried to tell you months ago, that that Congress, you have to do more, but you continue to see the deterioration in the jobs market. So now you see, you have to pass it. We have a former chair of the Federal Reserve, Janet Yellen, obviously now the Treasury Secretary, and we have the current chair of the Federal Reserve in lockstep saying the same exact thing. Well, clearly they're geniuses. Clearly their brilliance must surpass any type of economic or political pettiness that might exist out there. Can't question their authority. So just get behind it, get on the bus, and pass and sign this damn thing. That's what they want to do because they know the game is over. They know that they are trapped. Nobody knows the sins of the criminal better than the criminal. Nobody knows better than what they have done. We can speculate. We can look at some of the things that they do, what they have done. We can look out in the marketplace. We can look at the justice system, obviously, when we talk about market manipulation. We can see in court documents and press releases. We can see deferred prosecution agreements. We can see the amount of fines that are put out there and what these banks and other financial institutions pay for manipulating and rigging markets. But of course, there's no true accountability. The CEOs remain the CEOs. They continue to get their bonuses. The managing directors who are responsible on the various trading desks, depending on the asset that they were manipulating, the market they were manipulating, rarely, if ever, gets fired. Nobody's held to account. And it's the shareholders that has to pay the bill, not the board, not the CEOs, not the managing directors or anybody else on the trading floor. This is just the way that it is. When's it going to stop? The system will exhaust itself, and it's going to wipe a tremendous number of people out. I don't know who's really going to be saved by this, no matter how you're invested, no matter if you're in all in cash, if you're in Bitcoin, gold, silver, commodities, whatever you think is the right play. When this all comes crashing down, it's going to wipe pretty much all of us out to some degree. There might be a bounce back in a certain sector of the economy within certain assets, you know, but that remains to be seen. But these people are trapped. They know it. It's evident in the bond market with these yields increasing. This is not predicated off of true fundamental economic growth. GDP, as I state here all the time, because this is just what it is, it's an arithmetic equation. You have government spending, investment, consumption, and net exports. Well, if you can artificially juice some of those numbers in this equation, government spending, by spending more, by borrowing more, by printing more, well, then what do you think is going to happen? Necessarily, that number is going to go up, or at least it's not going to drop as far as it otherwise would, absent that quote-unquote stimulus. So that's just math. But it doesn't mean there's actual production. You know, the real part of gross domestic product, product being here because of production. There is no production. This is money printing. This is not real. This is building a house. This is building a structure on a foundation of sand. Yeah, it might stand for a while. It might look pretty. You might fix up the interior real nice with the best of things. But just wait till the tide comes in. Wait till you get a heavy storm. Wait till the hurricane comes. You're washed away before anything happened. That's not how we're supposed to build these types of markets, but that's exactly what we're doing. Because nobody wants the music to stop on their watch. Nobody wants to be held accountable. Nobody wants to take responsibility. We are engaged in the largest economic experiment ever in human history, at least as far as we know. And this is a global effort of federal government spending, central bank printing, monetization. Obviously, there are different degrees of fiscal support and how fiscal authorities around the world are targeting their support. Some are making investments in infrastructure, job reskilling and training, which is the smarter thing to do if you're going to do these types of policies, which you shouldn't be doing, but at least it's going towards some sort of investment, some sort of payoff in the future. What we're doing here in this country is the worst thing possible. We're just giving people money. We're just printing it and giving them. Here you go. Here's $1,400 here. Here's $1,600 there. $600 extra. $2,000. Ba, 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 ba. No infrastructure spending. So there's no investment, there's no payoff, there's no job retooling or any work training programs. None of that's taking place here. We are stealing and robbing so much future prosperity, it's sickening and it disgusts me because it affects, obviously, my generation of the millennials. in generations that don't even exist yet are going to have to bear the biggest cost of this. The inflation that's coming, the lower living standards, etc., etc., lack of opportunities, all because of what we have done. You can allow time and compounding interest to work for you, or you can allow it to work against you. From a societal standpoint, from a political standpoint, unfortunately, we chose the choice where it was, let's let it work against us. Let's everybody just have everything right now. Let's max out the credit card. And then once we max it out, let's max it out again. Let's increase the limit. Let's just go to Congress. Let's just have them increase it. Yeah, the debt limit, let's just increase it once again and then max the card out immediately again. Oh, there was no real growth to pay it back. Nope. So what are we going to do? Oh, let's go back and increase the debt limit. And we wonder why we're in the mess that we're in. We talked about the survey that was done last summer to get a good pulse check as to the savings situation within this country. It's heartbreaking. 39% of the country couldn't come up with $400 in the event of an emergency. The median savings account is $3,500. Half the country doesn't have retirement savings. And that average balance or median balance is about $50,000. That's nothing. And this is supposed to be the greatest and wealthiest nation on the face of the earth? Give me a break. And now these idiots are officials. Some elected, some not. Here, Jay Powell is not an elected official. He's appointed. Telling us that the Bureau of Labor Statistics official unemployment rate is wrong, which we all know. But now they're openly saying it because he has an agenda. His agenda is to print more money. His agenda is to convince Congress to spend more money so that he can print it to finance it. Not because this is going to solve anything. It's not. If the printing press solved problems, then we would be taking our notes from Venezuela and Argentina, Zimbabwe, etc., etc. But we're not, because it doesn't work that way. So that's why today's podcast is titled Fake Unemployment. And then when you look under the hood, which we like to do here, obviously, and not just look at the headline numbers, but look a little bit deeper. Obviously, in the number of permanent job losers, still stubbornly high at 3.5 million, which takes us back to about 2013. Okay, to get to a number that high. Well, we've been plateauing there for the past few months. Not good. When you look deeper at the labor force participation rate, we're currently at 61.4%. Okay, 61.4%. I don't know what that means. All right, well, before the crisis, before the lockdowns, we were at 63.3%. Okay, the higher the number, the better. Labor force participation rate. We dropped off a cliff in April, down to 60.2%. All right, well, what's the 60.2%? We have to go all the way back to the 1970s to have a labor force participation rate that low of 60.2%. Now, we have since bounced back. I wouldn't call it a V. I'd call it more of like a check mark, if you will, and not a great check mark. But now, again, we are currently at 61.4%. So a bottom of 60.2% up to 61.4%. And we're plateauing, and actually we're starting to go the other way. That's because you can't print jobs. You want to flood the system with this much liquidity? Fine, you can do it. You shouldn't, but they did it. So now we have to deal with the consequences of it. And this is it. It only gets you so far. It got us, where are we, 9-10 months worth of propping things up, and now they're calling for another $2 trillion on top of the $900 billion Nobody Cares Act 2.0 that was passed in December, and attached to the hip of that was just a regular spending bill of $1.3 trillion or $1.4 trillion. This just doesn't end. And we're going to look at the U.S. debt clock real quickly, too, in the not-too-distant future here on this podcast today, just to let you know where we currently stand at the current rate 4 years from now in 2025. We'll get to that. But we're still looking here at the labor force participation rate. We peaked with this data metric back in 2000, around 67, 67.3, okay? Ever since then, we've been coming down. Okay, the greatest economic catastrophe that we had prior to this was, of course, the great financial crisis, 2007, 2008, 2009, etc. Well, we were at 66.3% in 2006. So that's where we peaked prior to the GFC. So that's just a little bit of context as to how destructive and how devastating the great financial crisis was and remains to be. I try to stress this as much and as often as I can, that we are still dealing with the effects of the great financial crisis. That was trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. Wealth that was just wiped out. People's lives that were totally ruined. Again, this is why you had Obama. He was the change agent, right? He was this young, charismatic guy, can deliver a speech. No political experience, no experience doing much of anything, but the country's in desperate times. So, well, maybe that's what we need. Nope, didn't do much of anything. That's why you got Donald Trump. If Barack Obama and his administration were so successful, then we would have been dealing with a President Hillary Clinton. God help us, for the last 4 years. But that wasn't the case, because we're still dealing with the effects of the great financial crisis, and now we're in another one. They thought they could continue doing what they were doing with quantitative easing, which at the time was the largest economic experiment ever, but now they're doing it on steroids. Now we have a Federal Reserve's balance sheet at $7.4 trillion, soon to be $10 trillion, and probably more than that if they pass this $2 trillion here. They do something with infrastructure. They do something with the environment, a Green New Deal, at least piecemeal. Do something with healthcare. They realize that $1.9 trillion still isn't enough, so they're going to have to come back for more. We're not even close to being finished. And we continue to see the real numbers deteriorating underneath the surface. And finally, a little bit of an admission from Jay Powell that, hey, yeah, it's closer to 10%. 6.3% ain't going to do it. That's a 50% increase. I mean, he's just, yeah, oh yeah, let's just add another 3.7% on top of it to get closer to 10%. Just boom, like that. Oh yeah, we're not even close. 50% variation. Yeah, that would be closer to the real number. Then you look even deeper, or same thing for the most part. Looking deeper within the unemployment report, or the jobs report, and you look at the employment population ratio, which is at 57.5%. Again, context, I'll give it to you. Where were we before these restrictions and lockdowns? 61.1%, fell off a cliff in April of last year, down to 51.3%. This is more of a V-shaped recovery, but it's still not quite there. This is just a bigger check mark, if you will. And since October of last year, we have been plateauing. 57.4, 57.4, now we're at 57.5. So still a ways to go to get back to where we were before the lockdowns, again at 61.1. But where we stand now, again at 57.5, how far back do we have to go to see that number? Got to go back to the early 1980s, following back-to-back recessions. So these are the time points that you have to compare ourselves to. Not good, not good, not good. Where did we peak? With this figure, again, employment population ratio, back in 2000, around 64.7, 65. And we've been downhill ever since. Where were we during the great financial crisis or in the lead up to it in 2006? 63.4%. Fell off a cliff, went down to 58.5% during the Obama and Bush administrations, carried us up to where we were prior, 61.1. It was just a continuation of trend. You're at that bottom, okay, there's going to be some building back after the GFC, that momentum can carry itself forward. And that's all we witnessed during 8 years of Barack Obama and 4 years of Donald Trump. This economy is in the greatest depression. This is the greatest depression. And it's global because it's all smoke and mirrors everywhere. Yeah, maybe some countries are a little bit smarter with how they're handling COVID-19 and how they're handling some of their economic policies. Maybe some of them are a little bit smarter with actually making investments in infrastructure, in jobs, retraining, et cetera, et cetera. But that's only going to get them so far. Even some of those countries, such as China, that's a bubble. I mean, my God, talk about smoke and mirrors. That's a fake economy, too. So I wish I obviously had better news for everybody, but I'm just giving you the reality. These are the numbers. This is what they tell us. And now we're starting to get these officials coming out and saying, well, those are, yeah, I know what they told us. I know what they're saying, but they're even worse than that. So that's interesting to say the least. market performance, we have the dollar index at 90.36, no major movements in any of the major currency pairs right now, but still hanging on to that 90 handle. Bitcoin is at $44,800 per coin. Mixed bag on Wall Street, of course, after Jay Powell was out there talking. Everybody loved it because, of course, we're just going to kick the can down the road. We have to pass more stimulus to get full employment. We're not even going to talk about increasing interest rates, et cetera, et cetera. Just let inflation run as high as it wants. I mean, that's basically what he's saying, because that's what they're doing. We're just going to continue to print money until we get full employment. So they used to make the argument about being data dependent. Now it's whatever they want. They're making this stuff up as they go. Overnight futures trading, Dow Jones Industrial Average, S&P 500, and the NASDAQ 100 are all flat. Cash trade in Japan up 0.2%. A sea of red across the pond in Europe. And yeah, that's pretty much about it. The Indian exchange is flat as well. On a share price front, the biggest loser of the day here of the about 15 stocks that I'm looking at is Tesla, giving back 5.2%, trading at $804 per share. Big gain for the day was Goldman Sachs at 1.3% for the day. So Tesla, after announcing that they are purchasing, or they have purchased, $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin in our podcast, The Bubble Buys a Bubble, of course, Bitcoin took off, but Tesla stock has not. So that's interesting dynamic, isn't it? One would expect Bitcoin to do what it did, I guess, off of that hype, off of that news. But one would also would have expected, I think, at least initially, for Tesla stock to go up. Well, it hasn't. It's been coming down. Now, this might just be a little bit of a standard correction, or perhaps it's the start of something else, because this is what it is. This is a bubble buying a bubble. And I'm going to make a couple comments, because a few people made some comments on that podcast. True to form, as I stated in that podcast, that people would, because as soon as you come out and you criticize Tesla or Bitcoin or any one of these fancy stocks or any one of these manias that's going on right now, you're going to hear it. And I have a small channel. You know, if two people listen to me or 2 million, I couldn't care less. Of course, I'd rather, I guess, it be 2 million. But I do this for me. It's a hobby, and I do it to educate as many people as I can. But even with my channel, even with this website, with this podcast, a couple people had to make comments. Now, I'm assuming they're real people. They could be bots, whatever, automated things. But I think these were real people making real comments. And that's perfectly fine. I don't expect everybody to agree with me. I don't want everybody to agree with me. I'm not right on everything. But it's just interesting to hear the comments made from some of these people. And of course, I see them all the time too, going after other people on social media, on people that I follow that might ridicule or might criticize Tesla or Bitcoin or something else, God forbid. It's like an army of people. It's like their full-time job to come out and find somebody who has had a negative comment or even a constructive criticism of these types of bubbles, of these types of stocks or cryptocurrencies, whatever the case may be. We'll get to that momentarily. Let me get through commodities and where we are in the bond market. But we have WTI at $58.33 a barrel, Brent at $61.10, natural gas $2.97, gold and silver pulling back $1,836 an ounce for gold, $26.85 for silver, and Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is at 1.14%, so still around where we were throughout the week thus far. So a couple of the comments that were made in respect to my podcast, The Bubble Buys a Bubble, was this guy doesn't know what he's talking about, doesn't understand the fundamentals of blockchain technology or Bitcoin, which I have stated here many times before, even in that podcast, that I am not an expert on these things, but I am capable of understanding what a bubble is. I'm capable of understanding what a mania is, and I'm capable of listening to people on both sides of the argument, people who are for Bitcoin and people who are against it. And when I listen to those arguments, I happen to agree with those who are against it. Not necessarily that it's complete bogus and BS, but that why is it Bitcoin that sort of rules the roost when you have thousands of other coins out there? And I imagine these people who listen to this podcast were probably the first time they've ever listened to one of my podcasts, which is perfectly fine, of course. But had they had listened to other podcasts, In the past, many times before when I've discussed Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies or blockchain, I have stated here that the technology of blockchain is here to stay, or at least until it's upended by some other technology, which is just what happens. You have the candle, you got the light bulb, etc., etc. You got the horse and plow, you get the tractor. So technologies are always going to come up. That's perfectly fine. And if they help us as human beings and society, more power to them. And I imagine that that's going to be the case with respect to blockchain technology. So there's no disagreement there whatsoever. My argument is, and my concern is what is taking place in the marketplace. What is taking place in the stock market, the distortions, the manipulation. What's taking place in the bond market? What's taking place in the crypto market, where you have people who are just bidding things up because they think somebody else is going to come along later to buy it at a higher price. I mean, this is just part of the broader bubble in which we find ourselves. It's not really the everything bubble, because I don't think we're in a bubble with respect to commodities or precious metals. There will come a time when that happens, when that gets extended, when those things hit some sort of overvaluation, but we're far from it. But we have people who are getting free money from the government, opening up trading accounts because they think they're geniuses and think they know what they're doing, and they're going in and they're saying, well, I'm just going to bid this up. Or they look at a share price and they say, oh, that's low. That's cheap. They look at a low price as meaning cheap. Maybe it's low for a reason. Maybe it's low. Maybe it's a dollar a share because it's about to go bankrupt, which has happened time and time again. You see a bankrupt company or one that's about to go bankrupt and everybody knows it, except these people who don't understand, and they bid it up. And it goes from $1 to $10, $20, etc. Of course, it comes crashing back down because of reality, but they don't care. More people get hurt in those transactions than otherwise. That's my concern with all of this. That's why I raise these concerns with respect to Tesla and Bitcoin. Because we know for a fact that there are other cryptocurrencies out there that use less energy. We know for a fact that there are other cryptocurrencies that are more efficient and effective when it comes to transactions. So why is it that Bitcoin rules the roost and not these others? Because it's first? Well, there's a lot of things that are first. Doesn't mean it makes it the best. Lots of times the first thing out of the gate is not the best. Somebody replicates it, makes it better. And clearly that's what's been taking place with some of these other cryptocurrencies. You know, I made the reference to the tulip frenzy and the tulip mania in the Dutch economy 400 years ago. Well, those people thought tulips had value. It doesn't mean that they do. Just because people think something has value fundamentally doesn't mean that it does. You have to stand the test of time. Gold and silver, precious metals, have stood the test of time. People want to look at Bitcoin as a hedge against inflation. Predicated on what? What history can you point to that says that Bitcoin is going to be an excellent hedge against inflation? What history do you have? We are in the midst of the greatest economic experiment ever. All of these central planners pulling on all of the levers of the economy, of society, trying to get things right. And of course, they're just screwing it up massively. Where has Bitcoin been that says, oh yes, this is where I want to put my money because when all hell breaks loose, this is going to be it? Gold and silver have been here for thousands of years. They have stood the test of time. They have been through one shockwave after the next. They're still standing. They're not legal tender, meaning you can't go and buy and sell and transact in gold and silver because the government says you can't. So the other argument that a lot of proponents of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies say is, well, the government, this is the way to circumvent the government. This is all decentralized. They're not in control of it. Well, the government isn't mining for gold and silver either. Those are private companies. But guess what? You can't use gold and silver in transactions. Government's not taking it. So why can't the government come out and say, well, we're going to outlaw Bitcoin. You can't buy or sell. You can't trade with Bitcoin. We're not going to accept Bitcoin as payments for your taxes. We're not going to do it. I mean, have they not thought that far through? And that's for any of them. And we already hear one central bank, one federal government after the next, either outright blocking Bitcoin or saying we don't like it, and government after government, central bank after central bank, talking about implementing their own digital currency. What do you think is going to happen? At the end of the day, it's your money. It's your ass. I don't care. More power to you. All I'm saying is look at it from a risk-adjusted basis, a risk-reward basis. There are other things where you can make a lot of money staying in your lane and understanding the fundamentals of the markets. It's not all about get rich quick. It's not about finding the lottery ticket. I'm perfectly fine with hitting singles and doubles and knocking runners in. From time to time, I'll hit a triple. I'll hit a home run. Maybe even I'll hit a grand slam. Perfectly fine with it. Hopefully I'm smart enough to take the profits when those things materialize and not just look at it as a profit on paper, but actually take them and put them in my pocket. But I'm perfectly fine with allowing time and compounding interest to do its thing for me, to collect those dividend checks and to reinvest them and to reinvest them. That's how it works. Because one of these commenters said, well, you know, you should send a link on this podcast to Warren Buffett. I guess he thinks that Warren Buffett, being one of the wealthiest people on the planet, one of the most successful investors of all times, I have some personal criticism of Warren Buffett, but that's neither here nor there. But nonetheless, you're saying send it to this guy. Well, to me, that's not an insult, which is what it's meant to be. That's a compliment. Gladly send it to Warren Buffett, somebody who's rooted his investments based off of valuations, fundamental valuations off of what's happening in the economy, looking at the business plan, looking at the managers, what are they selling, what's their service, what's their good, et cetera, et cetera. Holding and allowing time and compounding interest to work in his favor. It's not an insult, dude. That was a compliment. So thank you. Thank you very much. So we'll see what happens. Maybe I'll be proven wrong and Bitcoin is here to stay. And it will always be at $45,000 per coin. Or maybe it'll go to $100,000. Okay, fantastic. It's not hurting my feelings. It's not hurting my feelings because that was the other comment. That I sound salty. And that it sounded like I'm going to cry. My heart weeps for my country because of the decay and decline that we're in. But I'm not crying over bubbles. I do what I do because I'm concerned about people. At the end of the day, I still don't know why. I'm still confused about that, but I don't want people to get hurt. And I think more people are going to get hurt in these bubbles than benefit from them. There's just not going to be that many people who get the golden ticket, who get that winning lottery ticket. Most people are going to lose, and most people are going to lose their shirts. That's what I'm concerned about. This isn't the first time this has happened in human history. These things happen from time to time. We witnessed it 12 years ago in the real estate market. People lost everything. We witnessed this 20 years ago in 2000. People lost everything. We witnessed this in the Great Depression. And I told you folks few weeks ago, and it wasn't an image I wanted to put out there, but it's a realistic one because it happens. And there was another heartbreaking story of a young person who committed suicide, in part at least, because they lost money in the markets, because they don't fully understand what's going on. They might not fully understand margin and how that can put them in debt if something moves against them. We see some of the biggest names, some of the biggest bankers and investors jumping off of bridges, jumping off of buildings. Happened in the Great Depression. Stock market crash of 29. Happened in 2000. Happened in the Great Financial Crisis, real estate. This is what happens. Because people think trees grow to the sky. Stocks only go up. Until one day they don't. And it happens quickly. And when you understand just a little bit of math, you understand how much it's going to take just to get back to even. Something collapses 50%. You need 100% gain just to get even. That's not easy doing. So that's the fake unemployment. It's the fake economy. It's the fake markets. It's one after the next. I wanted to talk about day two of Trump impeachment. Not going to have enough time to it running over here, about 35 minutes right now. So we'll discuss that further this week. Not good, obviously, with what the former president did, but we'll save some time for that for another podcast. So there you have it. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Kritis. Godspeed.